You sure that's pointing at my face?
Glory leaned in closer. Her forehead grew distorted.
Is that thing set up right?
The image jiggled. An arm, Callie's, stretched across the screen to fix something.
That's better.
They were in the kitchen, Ginger realized. The kitchen in New Jersey. She tried to place it in time. Her mother's white hair was in disarray, and her eyeliner had been applied with a shaky hand to only one eye. This must have been right before we moved her into the Meadows. Callie was in New Jersey, and Mom didn't tell us. Glory smiled.
Bored of me yet?
Callie's voice off-screen. I'm never bored.
Of course you're not. Now, remember, once we make this thingamajig, you can listen to me whenever you want. Over and over is perfectly fine, but do it in private. Remember we talked about privacy? Maybe you should write that down in your notebook. That way you'll never forget. Do you have a pen?
Off screen. I don't forget anymore. I don't need a pen.
Everyone forgets sometimes. Go get a pen. I'll wait.
Glory closed her eyes and counted to 10.
Got it? Goody, goody, good. Now, when I talk about privacy, it's not because your sisters don't love you. Believe me when I tell you they love you a lot. Stay there, I'll be right back.
She moved out of sight, but Ginger could hear her singing.
I know you're in there, can't hide from Glory. Oh my, what happened here?
She came back and smiled at the camera.
Better?
Fresh lipstick, Ginger observed. Eyeliner on the other eye.
Let's go over what you are not going to do. Remember, you can go over this as many times as you need.
Glory blinked hard twice, what they used to call eye hugs. This was the moment where the video had been frozen when they first came in.
You are an excellent memorizer, Callie Claire. Am I right? Of course I am. Now, about the house. Stay in it. Be firm no matter what the sisters say. They'll have plenty to say, especially Mimi, but she'll come around. If the choice of who gets the house is you or the land bank, believe me, she'll pick you.
She smiled, proud of herself. Ginger glanced at Mimi, who was watching through narrowed eyes.
She means well, Glory said. It's just Mimi thinks I'm not fair. Nothing you can do. Been that way since the day she was born. If she starts up with the it's not fair business, just sing a song in your head. Not out loud. Out loud doesn't work as good. Try the Swiss Navy one. Song's perfect for getting into the brain cracks. Pushes everything you don't want to think about out. Not just you, works for everyone. Keeps the brain crisp.
Glory cleared her throat and started singing, alternating shoulders thrusting forward to a beat no one else could hear.
We don't want to march with the infantry, ride with the binfantry.
She stopped.
Do the motions. That's what makes it fun.
She looked disappointed and then smiled. Callie must have finally done what she'd asked. She started moving too, standing up, stomping her feet. But since the camera couldn't follow her, all that Ginger saw was a flash of her mother's stomach, of her hips, of her neck.
We don't want to fly over Germany. Okay, now you try. Just in your head.
Settling back in her chair, Glory stared out with piercing eyes.
Are you singing?
She joined in, singing silently, exaggerating the movement of her lips so Callie could see what the words were.
We're in the Swiss Navy.
When she was done, she applauded. Then she turned serious.
It will make me very happy to know you'll be living in this house with your brother. His memory, I mean. And don't worry. If you need help with the house, you have Casper. He'll always be here for you. Well, not always.
A look of distress passed over her face, but she shook it away.
Otherwise, ask Thomas. What a sweet boy that Thomas is. A real lifesaver.
Callie said something Ginger couldn't understand.
I know you think you can.
Glory's voice turned softer. But everything doesn't always go exactly how we want. Sometimes emergencies happen and we need a backup. Not just you, everyone. That's what your notebook is for. Backs up your brain. Remember what we learned? How we don't forget what we do every day? I don't forget things. When you're stressed, you do, which is normal. Everyone gets stressed. And you're lucky you have Echo.
She stopped and listened to something Callie said.
Normal lifespan, 12 to 15 years. What is he now, 8? So he'll be around a while. You remember what to do when it's his time to go? Course you do.
Off screen, Callie answered, Ask Holly for a new dog. And Ginger realized,
Echo is a service dog.
You have Holly's number in your book, right?
Goody good.
And you're not too shy to call her?
Good.
You have to promise you won't get shy about your words again. Do you promise?
Ginger turned up the volume, but they could not make out Callie's answer.
So what? You get a little tongue-tied. Who doesn't?
Talk anyway, and sing. Singing keeps stress away.
You must not let yourself get shy about using words, Callie Claire.
You don't want to ever lose your words again.
I will never forgive that school witch making you self-conscious about talking.
Well, I fixed her, didn't I?
Every family has its quirks. Ours is we mix up words. That's what the Tangles do. End of story, mission accomplished.
She mixed up words to cover for Callie, Ginger said.
Mimi's eyes narrowed further.
I sometimes catch the boys doing that.
Glory smiled, revealing a piece of toast stuck between her teeth for eternity.
We both did a good job, didn't we? I always said being an actress comes in handy, even when you're not on the stage.
We could have gone to Broadway, you and me.
With your face, plus how good you are at memorizing, we could have had quite the careers. I guess we did, in a way.
She raised her chin, daring the world to argue the point.
If you get down in the dumps, you remember that. We turned out to be a couple of excellent actors. You know what they say? Pretend everything's fine, everything is fine. And I'm not lying when I say that. I'm no liar.
Huh. Mimi coughed out a laugh.
Hold on a sec, Glory said. Don't move.
She got up and disappeared, but Ginger could hear her singing her way into another room.
Almost ready. One more second. Here I come. New dress, Ginger observed when her mother came back.
Glory sat down and smiled at the camera. The toast was gone, but a smudge of lipstick was on her tooth in its place.
Okay. Let's talk about food. I know you think you have it all worked out, but still, remember, 3 meals a day, even when you're not hungry. It's not your fault if you forget. That's what happens with people who lose their sense of smell.
Why can't she smell? Mimi asked.
Sometimes happens with brain injuries. Remember what to do?
Course you do.
Go by the clock, Callie Claire. 8 is breakfast, 9 is lunch, 4 have a snack if you're hungry, 6 is dinner, hungry or not.
What? She leaned toward where Callie was sitting.
I know you can take care of yourself, I know. You've told me. You don't need me, you tolerate me.
Ginger couldn't make out the words, but Callie's tone was reassuring.
Perfectly fine. Doesn't bother me a bit. Nothing bothers me. I'm like you, self-sufficient. Put me in a room where I can sit and write my plays all day with no one interrupting. Happy as a clam.
Plays? Ginger repeated, and Mimi shrugged. No idea.
In this house, never could get a minute to myself. So much tumult. But do I dwell? No. Water under the bridge.
Glory suddenly looked alarmed.
That's an expression.
You know I don't want you jumping off bridges. Doesn't matter if you're a good swimmer. You don't always know if something is safe or not.
There was the muffled sound of Callie talking. Glory nodded.
Yes, you used to swim like a fish. But you think I can do everything I used to? Your father and I used to dance like a dream. I came this close to being a Rockette. Now, I kick a pebble out of my way, I topple over. Just how it is.
Promise me, Callie Claire, no more jumping off the Oak Bluffs bridge. And no swimming in the cut.
What did the doctor tell us? You have an urge to do something, you're not sure it's a good idea, what do you do?
A soft voice answered, too quiet for them to hear.
Correct. You put that note under your pillow and you sleep on it. Every morning you check. If there's a note, you read it and decide. That's called not being impulsive, especially if you get stressed. Not just you. Anyone can make bad decisions when they're stressed. Something to remember when I'm gone.
Callie mumbled something.
Of course I'm here now. What I'm talking about is someday. Someday when I'm not here.
Glory sighed and seemed to deflate.
Of course, you can always visit me on your computer. Or in here.
She tapped her head.
Memory.
She seemed to be struggling to maintain her composure. She shifted, moving closer to the screen, and pulled a tissue out of her sleeve. Now Ginger could see the spidery lines around her lips and the broken capillaries in the crease of her nose. Glory swiveled away, patted her cheeks and eyes with her tissue, and swiveled back.
Remember, when I'm gone, you'll have your sisters. And don't worry. It'll be fine with all of you together. Everyone's all grown up now. Transplantation took. Every one of you bloomed. You're one big, beautiful bouquet.
Her stare hardened.
Your sisters will do anything for you.
And then she seemed to sink into her chair.
I don't know how I got myself into this predicament.
She turned away and dabbed her eyes. And off-screen, Callie said something.
I'm fine. You know me. I'm always fine.
She straightened her spine.
As far as the sisters go, just remember, Mimi is as stubborn as a bloodstain. Came that way straight out of the womb. And Gingy has skin like a peach. Bruises if you look too hard. Nothing you can do about it.
She sighed and her mouth twitched.
Was every decision I made the best?
She got very still.
Maybe not.
She shook off the thought and looked away. And when she looked back, her eyes were wet again.
Pay no attention to my eyes.
She sniffed hard.
Dry as dust in this house. Eyes tear up every time I blink.
I'll be fine. We Mangles are always fine. She wiped her eyes with the side of her hand and smiled.
I got to ask Gingy to get me drops. Gingy loves to do errands. You need anything at all, Callie Claire, just ask her. Makes her happy. I don't know why. Girl has a marshmallow for a heart. If you have a big problem, get Mimi on the horn. What a fighter. Like a bulldog. Never gives up. She's like me that way. And if Mimi says no, ignore her and ask again. She'll come around. She may be tough on the outside, but inside another big heart. Both of them. All of you. My three big-hearted girls. Oh!
She waved her hands in front of her face as if she needed cooling off.
Better stop. Getting dripsy.
Her hand touched her mouth three times. Little kisses, which she blew into the air.
Kisses in your pocket, Callie Claire. Special kisses. Last forever.
She touched her hand to her lips again, and then looked over where Callie was sitting.
Enough?
The screen went black. Chapter 36. They watched the video a second time. When it was over, while Glory blew kisses for Callie's pocket, Ginger glanced up at the bookshelf above the desk, at the notebooks lined up like soldiers. Notebooks that reminded her of the ones she'd used in elementary school. She pulled one out, handed it to Mimi, and pulled another for herself. She ran her hand over the cover, an embossed illustration of two girls, heads hidden beneath bonnets, exchanging daisy bouquets, and then opened it.
Are these the plays she was talking about? Mom wrote plays?
They're her journals, Mimi said, skimming, from when she toured with her theater group. Ginger read a couple of paragraphs.
This isn't real. This didn't happen. Listen, today we performed at the Lake Lugano Concert Hall in Schenectady. Lake Lugano? In Schenectady?
There could be a Lake Lugano there. We don't know.
Okay, but you think this is true?
The hotel was once a palace. The bathroom sink is made of gold. Every night we dress for dinner. That's the rule. Men have to wear white tie and women wear gowns with long white gloves. Imagine.
A palace in Schenectady. And gowns? Mom packed gowns and long white gloves.
It could be. It's possible. Ginger didn't think so. She read from the next page.
Today I was late for rehearsal because I called home and wouldn't you know, Mimi had just started a fire in the oven. I told Gingy do not let her cook anymore.
I remember that, Mimi said. I made us TV dinners and put it on broil instead of bake, and there was a fire in the oven. That happened.
Okay, that part's real. But listen to what she says next. Lucky for Gingy, I didn't have time to stay on the phone and be mad because the butler was standing there, waiting to draw my bath, and I didn't want to be rude.
She had a butler waiting to draw her bath in Schenectady.
Mom was the queen of exaggeration. What else is new?
Ginger flipped forward and read some more.
This theater is like a church. It's got a domed ceiling with an actual mural painted on it, like Broadway, only better.
That could be, Mimi said, though she sounded less sure.
Here's the theater at the next stop. Like a tiny jewel box, like a church, with a mural on the domed ceiling, like Broadway, only better.
She flipped through, skimming.
Every theater in every town they went to is the same. Same curtains, same ceiling, all of them like Broadway, only better.
She skipped ahead a few pages.
Tonight was formal dinner before last dress. The chef made coq au vin like you can't believe. When he came out to meet us, he asked me what movies I've been in. Imagine, he thought I was a movie star. And he is not just any old chef. He used to be a chef for the Queen of England. Imagine, the Queen's chef thought I was a movie star.
She loved to embellish.
Really? Which part is true? The theaters are like Broadway? The Queen's chef complimented her?
She flipped to the end and read another entry.
Last night we got the news Richard Nash is coming to our performance. The actual playwright of The Rainmaker is coming to see me. This is it. My life is about to change.
Okay, here she switches, back to reality.
Callie is doing very well. She can make her own meals now and washes her own clothes. Who knew she'd turn out to be my most self-sufficient? She told me she's got a plan to start a business, a real entrepreneur like her father. Imagine, busy all the time, planning her business, taking care of dogs. I hardly ever see her, but I don't mind. I'm content to sit in this lovely chair on this lovely deck and write to you, my darling journal.
Ginger closed the book.
She was here. That's why the people in the tabernacle knew her. Not because she was a generous patron who sent them a check in the mail. She attended those concerts. She told us she was going on tour with her theater group. Told all those stories about summer stock, but she was here, sitting on the deck outside, making things up.
Ginger glanced at Mimi and her shoulders sank.
You knew?
No, but she might have tried to tell me.
Mimi sighed. You were in college, okay? Callie was at her special acting school. I was stuck finishing high school. I tried to stay out of the house as much as possible, especially when Mom got weird. I mean, unusually weird. One night, out of the blue, she apologized to me. It was all crazy talk about how she wasn't where I thought she was. It didn't make any sense. I thought she was drunk.
You didn't ask her to explain what she meant?
Really? When you were alone with Mom and she got all, let's tell each other what's really in our hearts, what did you do?
Get out of the room, fast as possible.
Thank you, which is exactly what I did. Can't tell you where I went, but I got out of there as fast as I could.
Next time I saw her, makeup on, perfumed wrists, like it never happened. She tells me she's going with her theater group to Niagara Falls. I never questioned it.
She slumped in her seat.
What was wrong with me?
Why would you question it? It was such a relief when she went away.
Ginger pulled another book off the shelf, a later model, this one with a hand-tooled leather cover. She opened it and read. I miss those two girls. I think about them all day long. Imagine what it would have been like if we could have been together. I'm going to call them, both of them. Send them kisses. Kisses for their pockets. Special kisses last forever.
Ginger closed the book. Mimi took the last journal off the shelf and skimmed it.
No theater group touring here. This one's all real. What a horrid day, all that nonsense with the cut. I wish I was allowed to read the notes Callie puts under her pillow. But no, I'm not to interfere. I'm to leave her alone so she can learn to be independent, self-sufficient, self-reliant. What good is self-reliance going to do her if something dreadful happens at the cut?
The cut, Ginger said.
Didn't Mom say something about that on the video?
She tracked the video backward and stopped it, Glory's worried face filling the screen.
No more jumping off the Oak Bluffs bridge, and no swimming in the cut.
Callie was always a good swimmer, Mimi said. What was Mom afraid of?
I'm not sure, Ginger said, but I think we better figure it out.
By the time Thomas came back from his client's property, the pack of aggressive wild turkeys now scattered in the woods, Mimi was sitting on the couch, laptop open, complaining about how Google had let her down.
I got a fashion blog, a movie, what to do if you get cut from your team, how to care for a cut finger. It's useless.
Ginger explained to Thomas.
We just watched a video Mom made for Callie where she warned her to stay away from the cut. We're trying to understand what she meant.
Thomas nodded. That drove Glory crazy. Callie always wanting to go swim in the cut. Here, let me show you. He borrowed Mimi's computer and pulled up a short video. Friend of mine made this a couple of years ago. This is what it looks like the day they opened the pond. He turned the screen around, and they watched the image of a giant digger cutting a small trench in the sand.
That doesn't look dangerous, Mimi said. It's a foot wide. You could step right over it.
True. Thomas took back the computer and pulled up another video. Here's the same trench 12 hours later. What would you guess? Maybe 50 feet across now? The water did that. They always wait to open the pond until the moon is either full or new, because that's when the tide is strongest. With a strong tide, the water acts like a drill.
He pulled up a third video. Three people on horseback fording what looked like a raging river.
This is the same place at the end of the day. After the ponds had a chance to calm down.
That's calm? Ginger asked.
Thomas nodded. That's why kids always want to go the first day. Water zooming in two directions like a river going nuts. It's something to see. And not only because of the water. The fish go crazy, too. You get hundreds of herring racing out of the pond, and then like someone rang a dinner bell, the big fish show up with their mouths open. It's a great day to be a fisherman. The fishermen always seem to know when the pond is going to be opened. And on top of the fishermen coming out to get the stripers and the blues, and the stripers and the blues coming out to get the herring,
you get the birds. They come for the fish, too. And where there's birds, there's birders. Meanwhile, the water is crazy with riptides.
You told us about this, Ginger remembered. But why do they do it? Open the ponds, if it's so dangerous.
Have to. If they didn't, with all the leaching septic tanks, it'd be bad for the oysters, bad for the fish, bad for the birds. It does get crazy at the cut, though. Even the day after they open the pond. It's like a party. A real blast, except for when it goes bad.
Bad how? Ginger asked.
End of the first day, waves can be 2-3 feet high in the ridges. Old-timers like to say only the foolish ones drown, but I've heard of excellent swimmers getting in trouble in the cut. Most people know enough to wait a couple of days. The current's still strong enough to be fun then, but it's not so strong you're risking your life. Some people, though, just don't want to wait. That's why the engineers and pond commissioners, they try to keep it a secret. Which they can, if they're opening it under a new moon. But if the moon is full, well, you can't keep a full moon secret.
Ginger looked out the window and saw it, a daytime moon. There's a full moon now. She found the notes under Callie's pillow, two small pieces of paper folded like little origami hats. Both messages were the same. I want to swim in the cut. She ran her finger over the words. Her sister's handwriting was like that of a young child. Ginger whispered, "Be safe." She joined Mimi and Thomas in the living room. "I found two notes," and gave a note to each. After Thomas read his, he offered to drive. When they got to his truck, Ginger saw Echo in the driver's seat. "Why is Echo with you?"
"Sometimes if Callie's going somewhere she thinks Echo won't be happy, she'll drop him off at the house. That dog does not like to be alone, but he does like to lie on my mom's feet." He glanced up at the sky. "Looks like we're going to have a storm."
"Will they postpone the opening if it's raining?" Ginger asked.
"Not usually, but I can make a call. I know the guy who drives the digger. If they're digging today, he'll know where. Location changes depending on conditions."
He stepped away to make the call.
"You might want to grab rain gear," he told them, "or bathing suits. You're probably going to get wet."
By the time Ginger had changed into shorts and a t-shirt with a raincoat over it, Thomas was off the phone.
"No answer," he told them. "That doesn't mean anything, but we should probably get going."
As she got into the truck, Ginger noticed a defib kit in the flatbed, and next to it a rescue board, emergency blankets, and flares. "Why do you have all that equipment?"
"Volunteer paramedic. Always got my gear."
He slid behind the wheel.
"The pond is big. There's lots of choices where to dig. It may be a bit of a hunt."
"Is there time for a hunt?" Mimi asked. And Ginger answered, "Yes," because she would not accept any other option. Chapter 37. Sapayasa and Longpoint both had public access to the pond, so Thomas stopped there first. But the dredge was not at either location. They headed next to Kwansu.
"There's not a lot of public entries," Thomas said. "It's mostly locked beaches, but Callie wouldn't have a problem getting in."
"Why not?" Mimi asked. Thomas made a turn at the sign for Sheriff's Meadow.
"Clients. She's got a bunch who like her to take their dogs to their private beaches for a run, so they give her their keys to their gates."
The daytime moon, low in the sky, followed their movements like a malevolent eye. "How much farther?" Ginger asked.
"Almost there."
The truck bucked in and out of a ditch, and Thomas apologized for not going faster.
"These are private roads, and some of the owners, they let them get run down, to keep people from going fast. Some of the owners, they'd prefer we didn't come here at all."
The rain stopped, and now Ginger saw drops glistening on the low grass of the wide meadows that stretched for miles around them. No homes or people in sight.
remote except for the trees on the side of the road, which leaned in hard, as if they'd been whipped by the wind for so long they were permanently shocked into impossible angles of submission. As they passed a grove of gnarly oaks, twisted branches testifying to their resolve, the road narrowed further. Thomas had to slow even more. Now, Ginger could make out giant wood hollows in the wide-trunked trees, and though she couldn't see them, she could hear the rustling of small creatures. Above, a hawk circled. Echo poked his head out the back window and barked, and a cloud of startled butterflies burst up out of the meadow.
"Can't we go any faster?" Ginger asked.
Thomas shook his head. "No, this road likes to eat tires for lunch."
He held tight to the wheel as the truck rocked in and then out of a deep rut.
"We're almost at the boat launch. Callie's a good swimmer," he added to reassure them.
A few minutes later, they reached a parking lot. Thomas pulled his phone out and checked for a signal.
"Good. I'm going to make a call. See whose boat I can borrow."
He stepped away.
"Mimi, look."
Ginger pointed to a row of trucks, half a dozen parked close together, the pole racks on flatbeds and above the grills all empty.
"Fishermen are here."
She and Mimi stepped out of the truck, and before they could stop him, Echo leaped out and took off, his leash doing figure eights in the sandy soil. Mimi ran after him, calling, "Echo!" Thomas returned, sliding his phone back in his pocket.
"All set."
Together, he and Ginger unloaded the gear. Ginger took the throw blankets and rescue board. Thomas carried the defibrillator. They caught up to Mimi on a path that cut through a meadow. She held Echo tight by his leash. Together, they hurried on, past high white seagrass, a small cluster of red lilies poking out of the white like a surprise.
"It's not far," Thomas told them.
Ginger caught a glimpse of the moon disappearing behind gathering clouds. In the distance, she could make out water, the same steely gray as the sky. A narrow stream snaked along beside them. A couple padded by in a kayak, as if it were any afternoon, and Ginger, Mimi, and Thomas were a random group of hikers who just happened to be jogging at a pace befitting an emergency.
"Is this the pond?"
"Tidal pools. Hear those paddlers arguing?"
The wind carried over the nagging melody of discord. She nodded and Thomas sped up. He was working hard to keep the conversation going as he hurried, keeping things light, Ginger guessed, so that panic wouldn't set in.
"Guarantee," he told her. "When that couple pushed off this morning, they never gave a thought to what the current would be like when they wanted to come back. We call those two-seaters divorce kayaks."
Ginger turned and saw that despite how hard the couple was paddling, their uncoordinated strokes were confounding any chance of forward movement.
"They'll be fine," Thomas assured them. "They don't have far to go."
The path curved and he started running faster.
"Neither do we."
A pair of starlings startled out of the meadow, and in a motion that looked choreographed, swooped close together and then separated, so from opposite directions they could dive at a raven to drive it away.
"Nest must be nearby," Thomas said.
Ginger and Mimi were full out running now to keep up. They hurried past wooden signs stuck into the earth like pickets. Danger to swimmers, danger steep beaches, dangerous currents, danger shifting winds. Thomas pointed.
"This way."
Walking on private shoreline prohibited, horses prohibited, trespassing prohibited regardless of water level. Thomas led them down a short staircase.
"Here we go."
They stepped out onto a wide beach. As Ginger caught her breath, she waited for the first flush of fear, but nothing came. Echo pulled hard at his leash, and it flew out of Mimi's grasp. She called after him, but this time the dog ignored her, loping into the rough water and paddling out, snout in the air.
"Is he okay to swim in the ocean?" Mimi asked.
Thomas whistled for Echo, but the dog ignored him, too.
"This is the pond."
The pond. It was easy to understand why Mimi mistook it for the ocean. Sizable waves lapped at the shore, and the air held the smell of a seaweed stew. Ginger tasted salt on her teeth and on her fingers. Small cuts she didn't know she had began to announce themselves. A low fog had set in now, covering everything in a hazy scrim. In the distance, half a dozen sailboats bobbed and then vanished in the clouds. She heard a dim hum, but it was hard to know if it was a hidden boat or a small passing plane. A hard wind skipped off the water and crept in through buttonholes, armholes, neck holes. Her shirt and raincoat billowed like sails.
"The dredge was here. You can see."
Thomas pointed, and Ginger saw them. Tractor tracks on wet sand, disappearing before her eyes, swallowed up as the water raged from the pond toward the sea.
"This way," Thomas guided them to his friend's boat. He handed Ginger a life vest, and she clipped it shut.
Mimi said, "You stay. I'll go." "No."
Ginger blinked hard to see through the mist.
Thomas whistled again, and Ginger saw Echo paddling hard into the wind, trying to get back. They boarded the boat and headed toward the dog. When they got close, Thomas cut the engine. The boat rocked as they idled, and Mimi leaned over, grabbing Echo's rear and heaving him up and in. The dog stumbled, righted himself, shook off the water, and nuzzled Mimi's leg. Thomas restarted the engine, and the boat moved slowly across the pond. Water blew in from all sides. Though the beach had vanished in the fog, Ginger could make out the current going both ways at once.
"There should be lifeguards," Mimi said. "There should be swim cables. Why aren't the police guarding the shore?"
"There's miles of coastline." Thomas kept the boat on a steady, low course. "We'd need an army. We do the best we can."
The wind kicked up, howling its worry as it whipped them from every angle.
"What if we're too late?"
Mimi's voice sounded small.
"We're not,"
Ginger said.
"We can't be," she thought.
She looked up and saw a faint suggestion that beyond the clouds a sun existed.
"It's going to blow over."
She predicted this even though she couldn't know for sure.
"We're going to find her."
Water thrashed the boat, and Thomas stood up, knees soft to keep his balance. With a hand shading his eyes, he scanned the horizon. Echo moved next to him, tongue hanging out of the side of his mouth. Ginger rose to join the search. Mimi held her arm.
"Don't."
Ginger pulled away, and like a lighthouse, turned slowly in a circle, searching in every direction.
"Wait!"
She saw something.
"There!"
she pointed. Picking up a scent, Echo lurched to the prow of the boat, and before anyone could stop him, the dog was overboard, off again, paddling hard toward what they could now see was a small figure in the water. Ginger cupped her hands.
"Callie!"
Thomas grabbed a rope with a small float attached to one end and tied it to a cleat.
"She's okay," Mimi said. "She's doing the dog paddle. She's okay."
But Ginger saw something else.
"She doesn't look okay to me,"
Thomas agreed.
"She's in trouble."
He reached back and threw out the float rope.
"Callie!"
The wind carried her name away.
"She's trying to outswim the rip."
He drew the rope back and threw it out again.
"She should be swimming perpendicular. She knows that."
"Then why isn't she doing it?"
Mimi asked.
"Panic?"
Ginger offered.
"She looks tired."
She dipped her hand into the water. "Good. It wasn't cold."
"How deep is it here?"
"Not very."
Ginger unbuckled her life jacket, took off her raincoat, and put the jacket back on. She moved to the front of the boat.
"Is the ladder the best way in?"
"Don't." Mimi grabbed her arm.
"I'll go."
"Whoever's going," Thomas said, "needs to put on the rescue rope now."
"Ginger can't go. She's afraid of the water."
Ginger took the safety rope out of Thomas's hand and attached the snap hook to her life jacket. Thomas adjusted the rope so it was tight to her waist.
No matter what, he warned her, do not let go of this rope, and don't let Callie drag you down.
As he moved to the cleat, making sure the knot on the throw rope was tight, he told her,
drowning people do crazy things. Best approach is from behind. If she still manages to grab your neck, just peel her hands off. She puts her hands on your head, you push them away. She pushes you underwater or tries to climb on you, you let go and use the rope to get back to the boat. I'll get you out.
I can't leave her.
Then don't go. If she's desperate and you don't let go, we'll lose you both.
Please don't go, Mimi begged. That won't happen.
Ginger started down the ladder.
Thomas tugged on the rope. When I tug like this, it means I'm asking if you're okay.
Ginger tugged twice in reply.
And I'll tug back so you'll know that I am.
Thomas steered the boat as close as he dared to where Callie was swimming. Close enough so that Ginger could see that although her sister's arms were thrashing, her legs were no longer doing any work.
Go now, Thomas told her. Stay safe.
Ginger scrambled down the ladder, and she was in the water, all the way in, except for one hand holding on to the bottom rung. She felt the pull of the water on her weightless body. She let go and went under. When her head came up, she saw Echo ahead of her, back legs hanging loose, paddling fast toward Callie, who was struggling. Propelled by adrenaline, Ginger kicked hard, put her head under the water, came up to breathe, reached her arms over her head and fell into a strong rhythm. Reach, 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 breathe hard, mouth sucking in air. Reach, 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 push air out in a rush. Reach, 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 and then one last burst, and she was there, beside her sister. Immediately, Callie's hands clawed at Ginger's neck, and with great purpose, Ginger peeled them off. She repositioned her sister's arms so they wrapped around her waist. But Callie seemed determined to use Ginger's head as a lever to heave herself out of the water, and when that didn't work, she tried to make a ladder out of Ginger's torso. Ginger could feel her sister's feet desperately scrambling to find footing on her shoulders and then on her head. It was just as Thomas had described. Callie was in a full panic, ready to do anything to get air. But Ginger would not push her off. She would not let her sister drown. The water rushed over them both, and again Callie pushed down on Ginger's head to try and get air. Down Ginger went, down and further down, and then there was something behind her, Echo behind her, pushing at her back. Taking advantage of the momentum, Ginger forced her body up, her head up, gasping for air. Beside her, she saw Callie staring, wide-eyed and confused.
Hold this!
Ginger tried to force the goose-egg float of the rescue rope into her frightened sister's hand. But Callie flailed. Ginger felt herself tiring. The thought came like a life raft, her mother telling Callie she would not be scared if she sang. The song came into Ginger's head out of nowhere.
Sing with me, Callie. There once was a boy in the North Country. Sing like Mom told you. There once was a boy in the North Country. Hold the float, Callie, and sing with me.
And she saw it, Callie's hand closing around the small float. The pond water was stinging Ginger's cheeks as she urged her on.
Sing, Callie Claire, sing!
And head tipped back, water spraying her face. Callie's lips parted and moved. In a quiet voice, she began to sing.
He had sisters, 1, 2, 3. Keep going, Callie Claire. We're almost there. Love will be true, true to my love. Love will be true to you.
Ginger's hand smacked against the side of the boat, and then Thomas was pulling Callie in. Thomas and Mimi both were pulling Callie in together, and with her last remaining bit of energy, Ginger heaved herself over the lip of the dinghy and belly-flopped onto the deck. For a moment, she lay still beside her sister, both of them breathing hard. When their heads turned toward each other, Ginger saw Callie's eyes open wide, the same bright
blue as their mother's.
Don't ever do that again,
Ginger told her in a rush. In that moment, it was as if no one else was there.
Charlie died. Julia left. You cannot get hurt.
Callie turned on her side and spat up the sea. When Ginger heard the sound of crying, she thought it was Callie, and then realized it was both of them, sobbing together. The bottom of the boat scraped at the shore of the pond. Ginger sat up. Callie tried to move, but she was too exhausted. Mimi kneeled beside her and stroked her sister's hair.
Thomas is turning the boat around. He's taking us back. We're going to get Echo now.
Chapter 38. There wasn't a life cycle event that Mimi didn't think could be improved by a theme. It took some brainstorming, but she figured it out. The scattering ceremony theme would be cast party. With Richard, Neil, and the boys, collected from the last ferry of the day, sitting in the living room with Ginger and Callie, Mimi made her pitch. Imagine a lifetime achievement award after party kind of thing. Perfect, right? Neil and the boys mumbled sounds of consent without looking up from their devices.
Sounds good to me.
Richard sat close beside Ginger on the couch, both of them leaning in to keep their bodies touching at all times, like teenagers. They'd only had a moment in private after the ferry got in, but that was enough time to let each other know they were committed to making things better between them. Callie pulled a list from her pocket.
This is what Mom wants.
You're kidding. Mimi grabbed the paper from her. This better be the last one. There's nothing left to decide after this. Callie nodded.
Last one.
Of course, Glory couldn't anticipate all the particulars Mimi would come up with, but she managed to cover most of the bases. Mimi read aloud.
I know darling Mimi will want to plan the world's most amazing memorial, but don't go crazy with the food. I'll be dead, and you'll be too sad to be hungry. A little something to nibble is enough. Nothing fancy, nothing messy, and no flowers. All the decorations I need will be right there, by which I mean all of you. Musicians also know. You want music, use your own voices. Callie Claire, remind everyone to project. Gingy, remember your posture. Slumping won't make you less tall. For the boat, I want Captain Lou. Callie, you call him. Tell him you need the big boat. On the big boat, everyone will fit. The originals, the husbands, the boys, Julia.
Mimi shot Ginger a look. Ginger met her eyes.
I never got a chance to tell Glory about Julia.
Mimi quickly barreled on. Also, Callie, call Thomas. He'll bring Evelyn and Casper. Richard and Neil, you'll have to help Thomas and Captain Lou put Casper's wheelchair on the boat. Neil, try not to strain anything. There was no way to argue with the dead, so Mimi got busy, canceling the bagpiper, the banquet tables, the galvanized tubs, the champagne and flowers, and the catered beach supper. It was in the bright light of the noonday sun that Ginger finally saw Casper Diggins. His eyes had sunk deeper into his long face, and his hands, curled into knots, lay limp in his lap. He sat, listing slightly in his wheelchair, his understanding of the occasion unclear. Thomas had told her to expect this, that his uncle was in a state of genial befuddlement, happy to go along in good humor, even when he didn't know what it was he was going along with. When Casper saw Callie at the dock, his face brightened. But when he called out, "Hello," Ginger was struck by how weak his voice was, and how devoid of authority. He glanced at Echo, who had a cone over his head, and asked,
"Well, well, who do we have here?"
"That's my dog, Echo," Callie reminded him. "He has to wear a cone till his eye heals. It got injured at the pond. Remember, I told you, how your friend Beau helped rescue him?"
Casper's forehead remained furrowed.
"Beau," Callie prompted him. "Commissioner of Clams."
"Ah, yes. Beau,"
Casper smiled. But a moment later he lost the plot and nodded toward Echo, asking,
Well, well, who have we here?
Evelyn laid a hand on Callie's shoulder, as if to reassure her there was nothing she could do, and then she moved and stood beside her brother.
Casper, I want you to meet Mimi's boys.
She wheeled him over to the boys, and Ginger watched as he offered each of them a shy wave. Another wave went to Mimi, which Mimi returned, though Ginger thought it looked begrudging. After that, Evelyn wheeled him to where Thomas and the other men stood talking to Captain Lou. The men gathered round to admire Casper's new motorized wheelchair. But now and then, Ginger saw Casper steal a glance in her direction. She had no idea what memory she'd evoked, but it was clear when he looked her way, his agitation increased. She found it was hard not to stare. She was sorting it out, how to reconcile the threatening stranger her father had mistrusted on first sight with the sunken-eyed, befuddled man listing in his wheelchair. As to whether Casper Diggins had done anything to earn her own disdain, she could no longer say. The captain dropped anchor at 3 nautical miles, the legal distance for a scattering at sea. The boat rocked for a moment, and then steadied. But Ginger and Richard, standing together in the middle of the deck, still grabbed each other's arms as if they needed to hold on to keep balance. At the bow, Callie and Mimi stood together. Mimi, busy wrangling the boys out of an argument over who would hold the urn, who would toss it, and who would read the short speech they'd written together. Glory had somehow neglected to leave a list about whether she did or did not want a speech. As she tried to defuse the situation, Mimi fussed, organizing the boys for the photographs, making them stand in size order, and after Wallace tried to cover Hunter's face with his baseball cap, grabbing Neil and inserting him like a human shield between the middle and eldest boys. When Troy looked over at his mother, she smiled and gently touched his cheek. And when Wallace's face collapsed into a sulk, she leaned in and gave him a light kiss on his head. There was something in her movements that reminded Ginger of a cat managing a litter. Light touches here, quick nudges there. A mild but firm assertion of power, all conveying love. Ginger closed her eyes and pictured Julia when she was 5. The year she discovered soccer and announced she loved to sweat. And when she was 11 and ran into the kitchen like it was an emergency to say she needed to learn how to cook eggs. And when she was 13, moved to tears in a department store dressing room because the saleswoman announced in a loud voice that she didn't fill out her dress. And when she was 17, in the parking lot at Mount Washington, refusing to get out of the car. There was a moment that afternoon on the mountaintop when the wind went suddenly still, and the sun burned hot on their necks. Julia could have made a sarcastic remark about the weather. Ginger would now say she deserved it. But instead, she just tugged her mother's arm and took her hand. It was an unexpected and surprising gesture of grace. But Ginger was stuck in the argument, stuck feeling hurt. So her hand stayed limp, a dead fish in her daughter's hot palm. It didn't take more than a moment for her to cast her pique aside, but by then, by the time she finally grabbed Julia's smooth, soft hand, it was too late. "Too tight," Julia told her, the melody of her words like a curse as she pulled her hand away.
"No running!"
Captain Lou was losing his temper with the boys, and Mimi stood with arms akimbo, contemplating the best intervention.
"Captain Lou," Ginger called. "Any chance you know where Lillian Hellman lived?"
"Yep."
Wallace, grateful for the distraction, mouthed, "Thank you," and Ginger smiled, happy to have helped. She turned to the captain. "Could we possibly do the scattering there?"
"Can't get closer than 3 miles out," he reminded her. 3 miles is the law."
3 miles from Lillian Hellman's house would be great. My mother was a fan. If there's added expense, we'll cover it, right, Mimi?"
Mimi nodded, and the captain agreed. It was all the same to him. The boat slowly turned around and then speeded on,
and the boys ran over and thanked Ginger for saving them from more lectures. Then they stood, three boys and their aunt, faces tipped toward the sun. 10 minutes later, Captain Liu called out,
"House is just ahead,"
and dropped anchor.
"This is as close as I can get."
"Come on, boys,"
Mimi called them over to the side of the boat.
"Come on, everyone."
Thomas hung back with Evelyn and Casper, and Captain Liu stayed at the helm. The rest of them gathered at the stern, where, in a rare moment of brotherly kindness, Wallace insisted Troy be the one to hold the turquoise shell urn, while he and Hunter rested their hands on top. In the distance, a steamship ferry pulled away from the dock. Its horn blared. Captain Liu's boat heaved in the wake. The turquoise shell slipped out of Troy's hands. They all watched as it fell with an unceremonious plop into the sea. Ginger let out a laugh of surprise, but then noticed Troy was crying. Hunter shoved him and told him to stop being a baby. Ginger glanced over the side of the boat.
"Boys," she called, "come over here. You have to see this."
Troy, first to see it, shouted to the others,
"Grandma Glory refuses to sink."
"Typical,"
Mimi said as she joined her boys at the side of the boat, and they all watched Glory float, refusing to sink, until, without warning, the sea swallowed her in a giant gulp, and she was gone. Captain Liu let them off in Vineyard Haven. In the parking lot, Casper Diggins held his hand up in a stiff wave, and Evelyn, standing behind him, put her hand in front of her mouth. But whether she was blowing a kiss or holding back a cry, Ginger couldn't tell. Chapter 39 Thomas joined them for dinner. Lobsters Richard had picked up, steamed from a fish market in Menemsha. They ate on the back deck, Wallace and Hunter sucking lobster tentacles soaked in butter and dipping wet fingers into empty bags of chips to get the last of the salt. Troy stayed with Callie, running in circles on the back lawn, struggling to control a kite she'd bought as a gift, the kite now threatening to crash in the gusty wind.
"More string," Callie told Troy. "Let out more string."
The kite lifted off, and Troy let the spindle turn in his hands, yelling with delight as the kite darted this way and that, drawing an erratic course across the sky.
"Keep letting it out," Callie shouted. "But don't let go, no matter what."
Ginger watched them, Callie guiding Troy, both of them giddy as they ran from one end of the wide lawn to the other, the kite rising above the tree line, putting on a show. Thomas broke the silence.
"So I'm guessing Julia is away at college."
Hunter, who hadn't developed his poker face yet, went wide-eyed. Richard moved closer to Ginger. Wallace spoke up.
"We don't talk about that."
"Isn't the sky spectacular?" Mimi marveled. "Look at the colors."
"It's okay, Wallace," Ginger said. "We can talk about Julia."
"I'm sorry," Thomas said. "I didn't know. I don't know. I'm sorry."
"Nothing to apologize for. Julia's fine."
"I think this is actually the most beautiful sunset I've ever seen," Mimi said. "Have you ever seen a sky this gorgeous?"
"You don't have to change the subject," Ginger told her. "Boys, if there's anything you want to know about Julia, just ask me. I want to talk about her."
Wallace shrugged. "We don't have any questions. We know what happened. Some kid at school started a rumor she ran away, but I told him she's at boarding school and he should butt out."
"Watch the kite," Mimi called to Troy. "Callie, it's getting too close to the trees."
"Mimi, did you tell the boys Julia's at boarding school?"
Mimi slumped.
"Sorry, Gingy."
A moment later, she straightened.
"Neil, go take the kite,"
she called to Troy.
"Give the kite to your father and come here. I need to talk to you. Callie, can you come too?"
She turned to her husband. "Neil."
Busy searching through a pile of discarded lobster pickings for anything that still had meat, Neil didn't look up.
"Hey," Richard said. "Neil."
His brother-in-law stopped his search.
"Yeah?"